Bonsai. All in your face.
Chicken wing.
Hey, Freedom Train. Don't you know chicken that wing. I'm off my brain, out of chicken my wing. Brain. Got chicken no wing. Name. Hitting it to James. Everybody chicken say chicken wing.
Chicken wing. Chicken wing. Chicken wing.
Chicken wing.
Chicken wing.
Chicken wing. Chicken wing. Chicken wing. Hey, chicken wings on my brain. Chicken wings on my brain.
Yeah.
Chicken wings on my brain. Cause you know what I gotta keep chicken wings on my brain.
Okay, okay.
We don't like old chickens.
No.
We just like young chickens.
Chill.
They right for the chicken.
For real.
Chickens be in Greece.
Woo!
No chickens be in France.
Damn.
A chicken up, make it dance. Feed you in your belly. Put it with some jelly. Don't you know you jelly? You thought I was gonna say R. Kelly, but nope.
Yeah.
Even though I just said his name. Oh shoot, man. Now I gotta stop it. I'm off topic, but I like chicken. Wings,
chicken wings.
Man, welcome back to the Free to Train podcast series. I am Joseph Ward, and he is Patrick Irvin, and we are your MCs for the night. Bring you this chicken wing music, and we wild. But welcome back to another episode of Free to Train podcast series. I am Joseph Ward. He is Patrick Irvin, and you know we want to hit y'all with something different because we like having fun. So we just do what we do. If this is your first time checking us out, hey, man, this is how we get down. Welcome back to the Chicken Wayne Spotlight Hour, right? But before, I'm hitting my microphone and everything. But before we get deep in this, remember that Freedom Train podcast series is brought to you by PAX, Inc. And that's PACTSINC. And PAX, Inc. is a Black development organization aimed at developing the Black community to its maximum potential through a focus on education and economics with the trace of hard work, honesty, and integrity. For more information, make sure you visit the website at www.pactsinc.org. That way you can learn more about the organization, how you can become a member, how you can donate. You can view their codes of conduct that they've created for Black America. See how you can get involved. You can explore the Learning Center. And you can support PAX Inc. through the Amazon Smile program. Just scroll down a bit. You'll see Amazon Smile. Click on it, and that will allow you to register within the program. And the program allows you to be able to support a nonprofit every time you make a purchase. All you have to do is do AmazonSmile.com. Works just like regular Amazon. Bam, you register with the nonprofit you want to support, PACTSINC.org. Bam, Amazon Smile. Bam, you're in there. Bam, you make your purchase. Bam, support the nonprofit like PAX, and you in there helping people, and you feel good, and life is good, just like Pat feel like. Eating them chicken wings,
chicken wings.
Yeah, Jersey. What he said, Jersey? You said Jersey?
Jersey.
Out of Puggis. Georgia. Get your mind right. If you don't know about out of Puggis, that's because you ain't cool.
I ain't never said I was cool, bro. I just got bars. You know what I'm talking about?
It's all good. So we got a show, a good show for you today. We break it down we're debunking some myths about Black relationships, Black men, Black women, Black fatherhood, Black motherhood. We're debunking some myths through Black demographics, but it's blackdemographics.com. So we're using that to debunk some myths. We are talking about Anthony Fauci's leaked emails from the White House. Leaked emails about COVID, and the White House is defending him. And we're going to explore Dr. Fauci's emails to see if it's anything to even make a fuss about, see if it's anything that even is relevant or that affects us as a people and our community. But it's out there, so we're going to talk about it. And y'all homeboy can't stay out the news. Donald J. Trump is back in the news, and he's saying that he will regain the presidency in the summer. Dun, dun, dun. We're going to see if he can really do that. We're going to see if Trump can really do that. Can Trump do that? Well, we're going to talk about that later. But first, let's dive in to this Anthony Fauci stuff, right? Antonio El Dario Quinterio Fauci. That's your homeboy, ain't it, Pat?
Yeah, man. Me and Dr. Fauci go way back. You know, I hooked him up with his first girlfriend.
Don't Dr. Fauci look like he could play Lou Holtz in the movie? Come on, Notre Dame, you guys can do it. Come on, Notre Dame, you initially. I just know you can do it.
Oh, wow. Wow. Wow.
That's what he
sounds
like.
That, Joe?
That's what he sounds like. Dun, dun, dun. There you go. I make my own sound effects. All right. So, the White House has defended the president's top coronavirus advisor, Dr. Anthony Aldarius Quinterius Fauci, amid scrutiny of his recently released work email. So Dr. Fauci has been the face of the nation's COVID-19 response, drawing both praise and criticism. I'm very confident in Dr. Fauci, President Joe Biden said on Friday. F Joe Biden. But emails have raised questions on whether he backed Chinese denials of the theory that COVID-19 leaked from a lab in Wuhan. Because, you know, a lot of people either think that it leaked from a lab in Wuhan, or some people still believe that the 5G towers are emitting a live virus. But okay. A trove of Dr. Fauci's emails covering the onset of the coronavirus outbreak were released this week to media under a Freedom of Information request. Yeah, we all up in your stuff, Nick. So, in one email sent last April, an executive at a health charity thanked Dr. Fauci for publicly stating that scientific evidence does not support the lab leak theory. In an interview with CNN, Dr. Fauci said the email had been taken out of context by critics, and he had an open mind about the origin of the virus. In his defense, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki, P-S-A-K-I-Psaki, said Dr. Fauci had been an undeniable asset. In a daily press briefing on Thursday, she said, the president and the administration feel that Dr. Fauci has played an incredible role in getting the pandemic under control, being a voice to the public throughout the course of this pandemic. Mr. Biden reiterated his support after delivering remarks on Friday when a reporter asked if he still had confidence in the infectious disease chief. There's no proof COVID-19 came from a lab, but Mr. Biden was ordered to review into the matter that angered China, which has rejected the theory. Chinese authorities linked early COVID-19 cases to a seafood market in Wuhan, leading scientists to theorize the virus first passed to humans from animals. But recent U.S. media reports have suggested growing evidence the virus could instead have emerged from a lab in Wuhan, perhaps through an accidental leak. So that's just the premise of it. So before I get further into this, what have you heard about this, Pat? Because we already know you know about this. What have you heard about this?
I ain't heard a lot about this. Like we talked, you talking about with regards to the emails or with regards to the virus?
The emails either confirming or denying the leak of the virus, the lab leak.
I haven't read of any emails transmitted through Dr. Fauci that confirm a lab leaked virus. And given it's how they've already gone through the emails and pretty much cleared him, I don't know that there's actually anything in here. So everything I read about this basically said this was a story because it was a non-story.
I think this was a story because of the amount of conspiracy out there, an amount of people that want to be right about the origins of COVID, whether how erroneous or even hilarious they are, and their assumptions or their theorizing of the origins of COVID. Because, you know, like I alluded to earlier, some people say it came via the lab leak. Some people say 5G towers. They trying to get us through the 5G. Of course, we know we heard about the original one about the seafood market. Somebody eating bats and bat soup in the seafood market. Those are the three main ones that I've heard. But the the 5G one was going strong for a while, and the I guess the lab leak theory still has the same steam it's had since the beginning. So the people who believe it, believe it. But people who believe the other things, they believe what they believe. But and there's a lot of people who don't like Fauci. There's a lot of people who are mad at Democrats now. Shouldn't have put your trust in them in the first place. But hey. Now, I say that. All right, be a little messy. I say that, and this is a little off topic, but I say that because I saw a post, Boyce Watkins, on his thing, talking down on the Democrats, and I'm like, because it was slanted like the Democrats are horrible and the Republicans might be a little better, and it's like, nah, I shouldn't trust the Democrats in the first place. But hey, anywho, but I think that negative energy that they have for the Democrats right now is fueling a lot of this too. And then Fauci is down with. I think he take more of a liberal stance, but Fauci down with whoever the administration, whoever's the president. That's who Fauci don't have no choice but to be down with anyway. So whether he like him or not.
Yeah, I think. People are trying to make Fauci political, and from what I've been able to observe and see, he's really just about doing his job, about, you know, putting science and medicine first. Obviously, it's got his slant and his perspective on it, which is colored by his political viewpoint, but I haven't seen anything of him that makes him particularly a political figure. I know that he was doing a lot of gentle pushbacks on a lot of the things Trump was saying, and that pissed off a lot of Republicans. But even to that, a lot of Democrats felt like he wasn't pushing back hard enough, and that pissed off a lot of Democrats. But, you know, I respect the difficult position that he was in. He's a medical professional trying to give medical advice under an administration that is anti-everything.
Well, yeah, I mean, you got the goddamn president telling people to drink bleach.
Right. So, you know, he was in a delicate situation. And it's easy for those of us not in that situation to be like, man, he should have just told him you wrong and blah, blah. Yeah, it's easy to say that. How many of y'all got bosses that tell y'all to do fucked up shit, and you, as you complaining about how they ain't shit, you doing it?
Well, I'm sure. Behind closed doors, Fauci told him he was wrong.
Right. But people wanted him to do it in public.
He wasn't going to do it in public because, I mean, and I'm just assuming he's looking at the bigger picture.
Right.
If he's out of there, Trump and him put somebody else in there that Trump approves, and it could get worse.
Absolutely.
So I keep my mouth closed in public, but behind closed doors, I'm going to tell you what it is. And I'm going to do what I need to do in this position. But, you know, just like you just said, the example, there are a lot of people who they talk big, but their boss tell them some crazy stuff to do and they do it. So,
yeah. So that's why I said, I think this is a story, because I agree with you. A lot of the scandals, and let's not forget the last administration, everything that we thought was happening turned out was actually happening. So no matter how crazy the whatever it was, it all seemed to be true. Now, I'm overgeneralizing. You got to say that for the internet nowadays. Obviously, I'm not being literal when I say that. But a lot of real crazy shit was true over the past 4 years. So, but nowadays it's to the point where people just expect the crazy shit to be true. And Fauci is disliked by certain people on both sides of the aisle. So there are a lot of people looking for dirt on him. So when something comes out and it's not dirty, or it's not dirty enough, you get a story that's not really a story.
I mean, but you know, it's the government though, dog. The government trying to take us all out because the government plot to release, it's the American government's plot to release COVID in Wuhan, with hopes of it getting back to the United States.
Right, right, and doing what it
did. Because the plan worked, didn't it?
Yeah, and they wanted to vaccinate us with COVID so that they could inject us with something that they couldn't have injected in us all of the other times that they've injected us with shit, or that we've had surgery done, or any of the other number of times they've had to infect us with shit.
Yeah, like flu shots. Like you said, people going to surgery, people getting, women getting pap smears. Yeah, they couldn't have put a chip in your vagina, huh?
Right.
Yeah, men getting prostate checks.
Right. You know, women giving birth and getting epidural. They didn't insert a chip in you then.
Or how about what if the government decided to be more cost efficient and not chip people and just convince everybody to get cell phones?
And then on top of that, they follow up convincing everybody to get cell phones by convincing everybody to get on social media and post every goddamn thing they doing every goddamn moment of every goddamn day. Holy shit.
Yeah, because you don't have to have Facebook Messenger on your phone for them to have all your information. Because when you download apps, they tell you, hey, we taking all your information.
Yeah, Google, but then... But right. But then we convince people not to read user agreements.
Oh, because it's too much.
Right.
And then you don't read the book that come with the cell phone. So you really don't understand everything that comes with the phone, health factors and all this other stuff. But forget all of that, that practical, logical stuff. It really come back to the United States government being so sinister that they're going to go to China and make sure the virus happened, and then come back to the United States so they can create the virus almost a year later and then vaccinate everybody and give us the chip.
Right, because so the they put a code in the virus so that the virus would always seek to return home. Home being the United States. Yeah. I got it.
Because it's not enough that if me and you having a conversation and I mentioned Foot Locker, and then I'm scrolling Facebook, and then Foot Locker ad come up. That's not enough. They need to chip me, because the chip really conveys my need to go to Foot Locker versus just listening through my phone.
Right. All right. Well, there's a lot of, well, we don't have to go too far left. Look, I'm not saying There isn't any nefarious shit going on. We don't know.
It's a lot more efficient than what people are talking about.
Yeah, and that essentially, like, some of this shit just don't make sense. Like, the idea that they're trying to, that they put COVID out there to kill us all, that's a very ineffective way of killing us all.
Killing us all would collapse the economy, which will give no value to the people who are making money off of everybody.
So, and I'll say this, like, the people that say that they don't trust the vaccine because they don't trust the science, or they're not familiar enough, or they just don't, we don't know what kind of negative impacts there could be down the line. Stuff like that, yeah, cool. Like, you know what I'm saying? But it's the other shit where it's like, come on, bro. Like, they want us all to get vaccinated so they can implant a parasite in all of us. So they couldn't just do that through the food that you eat already? Like, that.
Homecoming. Like, all they got to do is lure you to a nice event that you want to go to and feed you. They could kill you. They could kill you at your local grocery store. Like, if these folk wanted you, like, if the government wanted you, you a got, and there's nothing you can do about it.
And they don't even have to go through all these complicated means of killing you. They could just have somebody walk in your house and shoot you in the face. Like, you're not that, none of us are that special, right?
Or convince you to kill yourself by just being unhealthy.
Hey, you know, they got a lot of people out there committing slow suicide.
Hey. So, I mean, I know we left on this, but just we're making
satire. I don't even know how we got here.
We're talking about the factors that go into what make this Fauci story, which is a non-story, story.
Oh, I got you. I remember now.
Yeah. So, I mean, more critical thinking has to happen. Like more critical thinking has to happen. It has to be more than just what you feel. Like I was watching the Borat movie on Amazon Prime, and he was staying with two white guys, two like real left wing right guy white guys, and they were talking that crazy stuff. I surely believe it. And it's like they sound like your boy, the videos or your boy that you be sending us. And ain't no facts attached to none of this. It's just people just saying stuff.
Yeah, people just be talking. Yeah. That shit is entertaining though.
It is. But yeah, like we talked yesterday, this Fauci thing is not a real story. It's not. It's a story because of all the things surrounding it. It has nothing to do with what actually was in Fauci's emails. Like his emails weren't nefarious. His emails weren't treasonous or anything like that. His emails weren't in support of China. And of course, you know, anything that people will feel like is associated with China, they feel like you got to be a charlatan and we got to burn you up in your house. So. Yeah, yeah. So that's that. So next, we're talking about Patrick's long lost third remove, twice put back in cousin Donald J. Trump. What's the J in his name stand for?
Jack off.
Oh, okay. Do I do it with two hands or one hand? Jacking off. Maybe no hands. I could check off with no hands.
I'm sure he could. You gotta breathe hard.
Like that. So Jackoff says that he will regain the presidency in the summertime. Mm. How plausible is this, Pat? You are a resident political insider.
I would venture to guess that he has exactly a 0.0005% chance.
Why you say that? Why can't Donaldless J.S. Trumpius become president again in the summertime?
Because half of the shit he would need to happen for that to happen has not happened yet.
So is he saying that a coup is going to happen?
He was hoping for what this is all a continuation of the insurrectionist, treasonous coup attempt in January. This is a continuation of that.
Okay, so he lying again.
He basically, yeah.
Okay, because he lied to all you insurrection people. He lied to y'all.
Yeah, he's still lying to them, and they still like arresting these people has actually turned a good bit of them into martyrs.
I mean, we. Didn't we talk about that?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, come on, man. I'm not saying we experts, but we're studied enough in psychology, sociology, human behavior, and just how folk move and how societies move to understand that these people were become some sort of a martyr on some level for some people. Because, hey, these people went to jail for a reason that was patriotic. They went to jail for the true meaning of the country. And so we got to hold these people up in high regard. It's like, mm-hmm. Yeah, y'all on that goddamn molly.
Mm. And a bunch of other stuff too. Nah, there's no chance of this. Are you gonna read something?
Yeah. I just want to do some foreplay for the audience.
Oh, okay.
So the position of mainstream Republican leaders in Congress is that the January 6th insurrection, while regrettable, is behind us now. It does not require congressional investigation nor any further rebuke. Rebuke in the name of Willie Earl. What is needed instead is the series of state level laws to clamp down on voting and make it easy for Republican poll watchers and legislators to challenge any results they don't like. The Trumpiest portions of the party, The view is quite different. That's funny, the Trumpiest. The rioters are martyrs, like you just said. The plight needs redressed, and their cause remains very much alive. Maggie Haberman and the Washington Post report that Donald Trump has been proclaiming to anybody who would listen that his return to power is imminent. Trump is obsessively following a so-called audit in Arizona. He's following in a so-called audit in Arizona, which actually consists of right-wing grifters conducting alchemical procedures on ballots in order to supply a predetermined conclusion that Trump was robbed. This, whoever wrote this, is hilarious. The defeated president has become so fixated on the audits that he suggested recently to allies that their success could result in his return to the White House this year, according to people familiar with comments he has made, reports the Post. The comical proceedings in Arizona have attracted Republican lawmakers in Pennsylvania who are interested in staging their own farcical ceremony to uphold Trump's claim to power. In the Trumpiest mythology, the Arizona cyber ninja recount will be the first domino followed by other states overturning their election results, culminating in Trump's reinstatement. This is hilarious. Trump's self-styled presidency in exile continues to focus on somehow seizing power. Pillowmonger Mike Linda has reportedly persuaded Trump that his restoration will occur in August, although as the Daily Beast notes, his timetable presumes a series of Supreme Court rulings that should have already begun to drop, but obviously have not. Trump recently met with Jeff Brain, CEO of the social media site ClotHub, who helped organize the January 6th caravans, reports Hunter Walker. Meanwhile, American Greatness, a journal dedicated to the proposition that one can stay loyal to Trump while maintaining a highbrow effect, has undertaken an editorial crusade to rehabilitate the Capitol rioters. One AG essay claims the real insurrectionists are running the country and the bureaucracy having imprisoned a few sad political opponents who did not understand the rules of the game being played. Another proposes that the rioters are heroes who should be elected to Congress. So I'm gonna stop right there. Kudos to the author, to the writer, and article. Kudos to them. What's their name? I'm gonna say your name. Jonathan Chait with the New Yorker. New York Magazine. So, yeah. So Donald Trump believes through conversations with, I guess, constituents of his that he'll be able to do something and make some moves and become president again in August. It's June. He got 2 months, but as the article was saying, he hasn't filed any kind of papers, any kind of motions, any kind of legal, illegal things or whatever. Whatever needs to be in place to even challenge, to even have the thought to challenge. So, just like I said, the motherfucker's lying again. I think he keep doing it because he know people going to keep believing him and keep doing stuff. And he likes the power that feeds his ego, so he going to keep doing it.
Trump has attained Jesus level of popularity and status.
I am him. I am your Messiah.
Yeah, like people are legitimately worshiping this dude. Like legitimately, like for those of you that don't believe me, type in Donald Trump shrines and you will find articles and pictures of people that have literally erected shrines to Donald Trump. And not just in America, in other countries. Like,
You said erected.
I did say erected. I did.
But go ahead. Never mind me.
But nah, but these people that like Trump, and Trump isn't like once he with the type of personality he has. Because one of the things we did get to go back to the Fauci story from the Fauci emails is that Fauci did not like being in the spotlight. He does not like it. He's anxious for the day when he's not in the spotlight anymore. Trump is the exact opposite. He didn't intend to become president, but he loved every moment of campaigning because it's thousands and thousands and thousands of people basically worshiping you.
Yeah, he know it. He left.
He won the presidency, and he got to experience 4 years of being the most powerful man in the world. And all of the adulation and reverence and everything else that went with that. Donald Trump is a narcissist through and through.
That's like giving a poor person $1 million.
Yeah.
You're going to want to do that again. It was fun. It was exhilarating. It was a rush to your adrenaline. Like it was what you've always dreamed of. Donald Trump had the most power in his life, as far as a global scale from a political standpoint, that he will ever have, because mm-hmm. we know his money ain't he could have more power than that if he took care of his money right. But that's the most power he's going to ever have, because he's stupid with money. But
let's be clear too: when you get to those levels of money, and I'm not even saying Donald Trump is or is not a billionaire. That's a show for another day. But when you cross over into $100 million or more, more money doesn't really make a difference to you. At that point, those people, in my estimation, because I'm not one of them, but according to the books and things that I've read, those people are driven by something else. You know, power, respect, authority, legacy. Other things drive them, because once you get that much money, there's really nothing else you do. Like, what else? Like, there's nothing else that you need money for. Money doesn't serve a purpose anymore.
Yeah, that's why I'm saying, like, he sought that position because that position was more of a power thing, because he has to look to attain something else, like you're saying. And so that there's nothing else he's going to do that's going to give him the rush that being president of the United States gave him. So Trump is always expect to see stuff from Trump every now and then. Trump gonna be keep popping his head up until he die. Mm-hmm. He's gonna keep popping his head up because he like somebody who had an injection of heroin in their veins once, and it's been a while since they had it again. They're not hooked, but they got enough of that taste that they want it again, and they searching for it.
Absolutely. And that's where you're absolutely right. That's where Trump is. And we said this even before the election. Win or lose, Trump ain't going nowhere. And we saying it now after he lost. Trump is going to be with us until he dies. And even after he dies, the Trump name is going to forever be attached to American politics now, because his kids aren't going to let it go.
I mean, his kids are not going to let it go. His followers are not going to let it go. People who support white supremacy are not going to let it go.
Yeah. And the history books at this point are not going to forget about it.
And let me be more clear. People who support white supremacy from the left, not going to let it go. Because the right, people from the right, because the left support white supremacy too.
Yeah, the right ain't gonna let it go. The left ain't gonna let it go, and everybody's gonna forever be at war over Trump. And that's gonna be Trumpism, like McCarthyism. It might die down, but it's not gonna forever be like totally gone.
Look, Donald Trump, whether people want to admit or not, Donald Trump is one of the most engaging figures of the last maybe 50 years. Donald Trump. Presence was so much that people tuned in for two main reasons: either they loved him or they hated him. So same reason people still watching Floyd Mayweather fights, or the same people watch Floyd Mayweather fights at one point to see him lose because they didn't like what he was saying or what he represented, whatever. So same thing with Trump. People was tuning in to Trump to watch him fail, to watch him fall, to watch him say something stupid so he could say something about it. Because that's just how engaging he is. And I was like, y'all, wow, whether you know it or not, you don't like him, but he got you. He has rented space in your mind, because every time he does something, you are flipping off the handle. You are, oh, he's so stupid. He's this, he's that. Oh, Agent Orange and all these different things. Like every time, like I know some people on my timelines, every time he say something, every time they got something to say about it. Yeah, thank you. He's won.
Yep. So as silly and idiotic and unlikely as it is that he'll be reinstated as president, something that's literally never happened this late in the game, they're going to believe that he can be the first because he is the Messiah. And that's just where we're at with it.
He did a great job of being a bitch ass because that sells. In today's society, it sells. Look at the entertainment and the media that people consume. Gossip sells. Gossip goes further than truth. Gossip goes further than knowledge or empowerment. You know, look at the main entertainment platforms that people engage into. Look at Maury Povich over the years. Look at Jerry Springer over the years. All these different things, housewife shows, these reality TV shows, things that be on the internet, Derek Jackson, all these different things. When drama happens, people gravitate towards it, and Trump is drama. So, I'm not going anywhere. So, here we are. So, y'all get ready for August, man. It's going to be a change of power in August. We got 2 months. And then maybe we could ask for reparations again. Because the Biden folks said they ain't doing nothing for y'all Negroes. Especially y'all ones who voted for him. All right. So let's shift this thing to another gear. We looking at the website of blackdemographics.com. And the data chart is showing black children, two-parent households, black fatherhood, black children statistics, all these different things. Debunking some of the myths about black people, about black families. Black family structures, black men being fathers, all those things we want to be able to debunk. So now we have this black demographics, but Pat, you have a good chunk in your book. First of all, tell the people about your book again.
The book is called The Chasm. It came out in January of this year. It came out January of last year. The audiobook came out January of this year. And it is a book looking at the relationships between men and women in the community. Not just romantic, platonic as well, but how we view each other and how we interact with each other is looked at. And the myths and the stereotypes we have about each other, the origins of a lot of those things. And what we can do about it. You know, the whole last third of the book is analyzing solutions and talking about how we can make things better. So that's the book.
So let's dig into some of these stats that you have. I want to start with some of the stats that you have in your book.
Okay.
To help. You got it near?
Yeah. Hey, one of y'all hand me my book.
Y'all hand him his book.
One of my books. It's right there. It's The Chasm. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
So, and I'm gonna say this one, but there you go. I'm gonna say this stat, but I want to throw it back to the stats in your book that you have. So the first one is saying, contrary to popular belief, and this is blackdemographics.com, and remember to get The Chasm. 42% of black children live with two parents, while 51% live with one parent. The reason why it is not well known may have to do with a commonly repeated statistic regarding out-of-wedlock births, which only takes into account whether or not a woman was married at the time she gave birth. This, of course, doesn't factor in that many births take place to engaged or couples who are not yet married who plan to cohabitate indefinitely. So just start with that right there. That's a higher number of children born in two parent units than the narrative say.
Yeah. And that's something that, you know, like I said, in the book, we talked about it. There's a CDC report that talks about the involvement of Black fathers compared to Hispanic fathers and white fathers. But going back specifically to this narrative that single parent households or single mother-led single Black women are raising all of these kids by themselves.
That's not true.
The statistics, yeah, it's not true. The statistics just don't bear that out. Now, just because a woman is single raising a kid, like you just said, all that means is that she's not married. That doesn't mean that she doesn't have a boyfriend or she doesn't have a long-term partnership with somebody that's just where they haven't turned in their certificate, their marriage certificate. So it's like an unrecognized partnership. That also, even if she is truly single, that doesn't mean that there isn't a male figure in the house. There isn't a male figure involved in that child's life somewhere. That doesn't mean that a child is just rolling around with no male role models whatsoever.
Right. Well, one of the things, I guess one of our objectives here is to reveal that though we have a critical issue in our Black community as far as how Black women and Black men relate to each other.
Right.
Black people are better parents than suggested. Black people actually co-parent more often than suggested. Black people Absolutely. Are actually together as a couple more often than articulated or more often than the narrative say. Now, if we look at it from who's married, from the standpoint of marriage, then okay, things would be a bit different. But we're just talking about together, period.
Right.
Black folk are together. More than we think. Almost 50% of us are together raising kids.
Right. So, and I think that's important because, like we said, the narrative that's pushed out there is 70% of Black households are single mother led.
Right.
And then, you know, we try to balance that out with all of the statistics and all of the crime stats and all of these other things, which is interesting because, like we said last show, and like it's been documented repeatedly, crime is going down, including in the Black community.
Right. But I guess that, you know, that 70% still goes back to the out of wedlock birth. So to single mothers, you are legally a single mother if it's out of wedlock birth, even if the dude is right there catching the baby as it come out. Legally, you're still going to be classified as a single mother. So that 70%.
Well, that's one way, because one way to track it is at birth, but they do have studies where they talk to the women. They have surveys where they'll ask a woman if she has kids and if she's married. And if she says, yes, I have kids, but no, I'm not married, then that's another statistic. But that statistic is also around 70%. So both measures accounting are around 70%, but both measures have the same flaws. Unless you follow up and ask, is there a male in the house? Do your kids have positive male role models that they can speak to or that are they're influenced by? Without these follow-up questions, those numbers really don't tell us anything outside of the fact that Black women do have children and are not married. But what value is there in that conversation, unless we're also having a conversation about the validity, the importance, and the influence of marriage as a whole and as an institution. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah, I mean, but like, okay, so I do want to, I'm going to say this, but I do want to get to the statistics in your book. But we have to really realize and understand that this is all a part of the propaganda that people who uphold white supremacy. This is what they've been doing. It's the destruction of the Black family. They've been doing this for the longest. This is the propaganda that they've been putting out forever, right? Mm-hmm. So it's to still keep the negative light on the group of people that you want to continue to oppress, because it's hard to oppress a group of people who are seen in a good light. But they're not seen in a good light, then it's easier to oppress those people. And it's even easier if you get those people to start to have negative ideas, negative self-concepts about themselves, and embrace a negative cultural image. Mm-hmm. So we have to constantly fight back against that. Going, I always talk about, go back to the D.W. Griffith, Birth of a Nation movie, and all the other negative depictions that they've had of Black people in cinema. It started in writing, but then it transferred to cinema and the music and all these different things. So we have to constantly control the narrative about what's going on in our communities. We have to do the statistics, do the research, and all these things ourselves. Can't let other people tell our narratives or try to tell our stories, because we know they're going to tell it wrong, because that's what mm-hmm. they do. Because if they tell it right, then they got to look at their kids and be like, yeah, we savages.
Mm-hmm.
So all right, so let's get to some of the stats in your book, my bro.
I mean, we can talk about the myths surrounding Black men, and if I have a stat on it, Black fatherhood, if I have a stat on it, I'll spit it out.
Okay, so it says, according to the CDC, about 58% of Black fathers live with one or more of their children. And an even larger majority, 72.7% of Black fathers, talk with their children about things that happen during the day, several times a week or more, whether they live with their child or not. And that goes back to what you're saying about Black fathers are more likely to be a part of their children's life than any other racial group or ethnic group of people in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
I put that on everything.
Mm-hmm.
What's this one I want to show? So this one kind of still repeating some of the same things. So Black children coming, 42% of Black children come from two-parent households, 46% coming from a mother-only household, compared to 70% of all children come from a two-parent household and 21% come from a mother-only household. So, I mean, our statistics aren't great. We can fix a lot of things. And I do get the angle that some people take. More particularly, I'm thinking about the angle that Kevin Samuels take when he's trying to get people to understand the importance of the Black family unit. I know Black people were grouping together, and it were more two-parent households 50, 60, 70, even 100 years ago. We know that has happened, but we also know the factors that has led to the family structure not being as solid as it used to be in the past. Like, we do understand right. that. So, and if you don't understand, it's different things like welfare, feminism, all these different things, black men doing their dirt, Black women doing their dirt, government doing their dirt, and everybody blaming Black men for the most part. And now we looking at each other like, damn, we messed up. So here we are.
I think one of the challenges we face is, one, the myth of the nuclear family needs to be debunked altogether in American society. This idea that at some point the majority of families were built of a husband that made all of the money, a wife that stayed at home, and kids that blah blah blah. Like, that's broken.
That wasn't the typical Black household.
Right. That's never been. That's never been the case ever. Has that been the case for Black households here in America? So that's one thing that has to be debunked. Black women, however they may feel about it, have always worked.
They've always had to work in America. So this whole notion of staying home, being taken care of, that's brand new.
Right. And even amongst the white people, even amongst Europeans, that was one of the things I went in my book. There was a book talking about the myth of the nuclear family. I forget the name, but I referenced it in my book. But, you know, in that book, it said that at its height, that model that we're thinking about only described about 25% of the households in America. 25% of all of the households in America lived that style of life. But some kind of way, we've gotten in our heads that that is normal.
Right. I mean, but look at the images of America. Most of America is rural.
Right.
But the idea of America is New York, California, Chicago, Miami. Like, no, those are large cities. Atlanta, yes, those cities do exist. Atlanta is the only real city, just about. It's not really the only real city, but it's the major city in the state of Georgia. The whole state, Atlanta, is the major city.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, like most of the United States, like most states have their cities. So Florida has Miami, Jacksonville, Tampa, Orlando. You can say those are like the four majors.
Yeah, you can't really count. I mean, go ahead. I would Jacksonville. It's a city, but
by size, it's the largest city in the United States. So giving it that, right? So right. So that's the state of Florida, but most of Florida is like small towns like Tallahassee or even smaller.
Yeah, I get what you're saying about landmass, but I'm also thinking about like a bunch of places. So Georgia has Atlanta and Birmingham, and I guess you could say Savannah.
Savannah is a significant city. But it's not like a metro, like I would say.
Yeah.
Like
so, but I think even when you're talking about like major metropolitans, which is what I think most people think about when right. they think cities.
Right.
You're looking at a Miami and maybe a Tampa. Those that would be it in Florida. That I'm thinking
Orlando.
About.
Orlando. I put Orlando.
Okay. You're right. Atlanta and Georgia. You know, you're thinking about Baltimore and the whole D.C. tri-state area. You're thinking about New York. Like you said, it's not a lot of those cities, but a large percentage of the population, according to landmass anyways, live there. But most of the country is rural, according to landmass. But I think, like you said, a lot of our ideas about what's normal and what is the definition of something are broken. So even when we go back to the Black community, when you're looking at whether or not Black men are being adequate fathers, and then you look at, okay, what are the social outcomes typically associated with fatherhood and having a father or a positive male role model, because that isn't necessarily always have to be your biological father.
Right.
That could be a coach that took an interest in you and took you under his wing or any number of other things. So when we're having these conversations, what are those outcomes that are typically associated with a positive male role model? And so you're talking about educational achievement. Well, that's been on the rise. You're talking about less violence in the community. Well, that's happening.
Right.
You're talking about more success in terms of economics and resources attained by next generations. I would argue that's happening. The problem with that is we're not keeping it in the community, but people are definitely earning more resources.
Yeah.
So, you go down the list of all of these outcomes and you're seeing that the outcomes are lining up with positive male role models. But for some reason in our community, instead of attributing those outcomes to positive male role models, we say, and this is no slack and no slouch, but and I know we don't catch slack
for it,
know what they say. But whatever. But you know, we say, well, Black women are doing their damn thing. And that's not to take away from them.
Hey, look,
they are.
Look, to be real, like, fathers don't get enough credit. I know a lot of people say mothers don't get, mothers get a lot of credit. Fathers don't get enough credit. Because that's the whole reason that we're here reading these statistics now. Because fathers don't get enough credit because of the narratives that have been created over the decades, especially against Black fathers, black men ain't shit. Black men ain't good fathers. Niggas ain't shit. Niggas ain't shit. Niggas ain't shit. All those things there. And black fatherhood don't get credit. Like, watch this. How you feel about Father's Day? Look, most fathers, yeah. ask most fathers how they feel about Father's Day. I'm not saying that's across the board, but a good majority of fathers, Father's Day does not compare to Mother's Day.
It's kind of a joke holiday. It's one of them like equality holidays that they do just so that people can't complain, but it don't really mean shit.
I mean, I don't care about no other community. I don't care about how y'all treat the fathers in no other community. But in our community, we need to make sure that we are celebrating fatherhood within our community because it's there. It's happening. Children have fathers in the household. Children have fathers who are active in their lives in our community.
And the other angle there, the other twist there is not only do children, because people also talk about, well, you still need a father in the home, but we never get into the discussions about why and whether or not that's relevant for our communities. And I know that's a discussion for another show, but when we're talking about fatherhood, I do agree. Fathers don't get enough thought and cultural discourse in the black community. And the interesting thing there is when you do meet a father taking care of his kids, you inevitably have this argument presented that says, so what? He doing what he's supposed to do.
Yeah. But it's like, we can say the same thing about mothers.
That's exactly where I was going with it. So, and it's one of them things as men, you just kind of internalize because you're taught that gratitude, appreciation, being recognized, being celebrated, all of that is stuff for women. Men just kind of keep their head down and do what need to be done. And I'm guilty. Like, I teach my boys that. Not saying it's right or wrong, but I do teach them that. And as I grow and I learn and I think about things, you start to think about how much that handicaps them in terms of and how much men are handicapped in general. In terms of even at this point, being able to appreciate gratitude. Like the first few times my wife bought me something, I didn't know what to do with that.
Our young boys need to be able to be comfortable being masculine, comfortable in their manhood, comfortable being men, but also comfortable expressing the full range of emotions that human beings have to express. And that doesn't diminish your manhood, but manhood is not toxic. Masculinity isn't toxic. What's toxic is trying to teach boys not to be a man and also creating environments where boys cannot express themselves emotionally. That's toxic. Yeah, teaching
them not to be human. Because here's the cycle, right? So men grow up and we're groomed, especially as fathers, not to seek out appreciation and not to care about recognition, right? And so then you have a day like Father's Day, which is supposed to be about recognizing men. But because men are groomed not to care about those things, we don't care about them. And so that reinforces the notion that we don't have to recognize men because men don't need recognition. And it's like this vicious cycle that continues. And then you get somebody that actually wants to recognize you and you don't even know how to process the recognition. Like you just don't know what to do with anybody trying to celebrate you or I know a lot of dudes that really don't care all that much about their birthday. And I think that's centered on the fact that
I'm one of like, them.
Yeah, like I'm one too. Like it's just another day. Like that's centered on the fact of you're groomed from an early age that as a man,
your shit don't matter.
Nothing about you really matters that much.
We're not going to celebrate, like, we're not going to celebrate you. You don't matter. Yeah, it's your birthday. We'll tell you happy birthday, but that's about it. We're not going to put no effort into doing nothing more than telling you happy birthday.
Right.
And I'd be like, Yay.
Birthday. But I think that's part of the reasons why fatherhood in the community is not really paid attention to. And that's also why narratives like the community is doing better despite of Black men instead of because of Black men are allowed to continue, because for so long, Black men have just been content to say, all right, that's how you feel. As a man, I'm going to just put my head down and try to do better. And Black fathers get overlooked with that type of mentality. But you'll be hard pressed to find a Black father that don't have some level of that in them. I've met maybe one or two in my life. So, but the stats, I mean, you know, you look at it with like Black people are, you know, you have all of these stats talking about how Black people are, Black kids are in gangs, and it's getting worse because there are no Black fathers in the house. And I'm like, well, if you do the math, there are only about 500,000 Black people active in gangs out of the 45 million Black people in the country. So where is this, all of this gang activity that you're talking about? Where is all of that coming from? Black fathers are active.
Well, come on. You know, people not really looking at real statistics. They just pulling stuff out their butt.
Right. But we could go down the list. And that's why I love conversations about this stuff, because it's like, well, the numbers aren't there. But what is there are the outcomes. Do the outcomes line up with the narrative that you're pushing? If the answer is no, like if Black fathers were really absentee parents the way that a lot of these stories like to run, our community would literally be falling apart at the seams right now. Not headed in the wrong direction. It would be falling apart at the seams right now. And although a lot of us see the bad and we see where things could get better and we acknowledge that things aren't where they need to be, when you actually look at the outcomes right now, the community is not falling apart at the seams. Now, culturally, we're having a lot of problems. Culturally, absolutely. But educational attainment is not one of those problems. That's up. Violence in the community is actually down. You know what I'm saying? Resource right. acquisition is actually up. Emotional stability, that is a community cultural thing. That's a whole separate conversation in and of itself.
Right. I mean, but like you say, I don't know about other folk, but we're going to keep having these conversations. We're going to keep talking about it because we have to get past the negatives about us. Us as Black people, we can't afford to continue to buy into the bull that other people create about us. And then don't even go. And then when our own people put the information out to debunk the myths, we don't even go look for it. We don't even know it exists. We don't even try to look for it. So, I mean, we have to do ourselves a better favor and a better solid rather than just, oh, well, that's what they say. So I guess it must be. No, is it really? They've been lying on us and to us and about us since the beginning. Assume everything's a lie. And go do your own research.
Absolutely. And that's good advice, even if, no matter who it's coming from. Right. You should always be asking yourself, what narrative is being pushed here? What's the purpose of this? Right. Who published this? What do they believe? Why do they believe that? What are the stats? Where did the stats come from? What was the methodology for gathering the stats? If there are holes at any level of thinking, then you got to analyze those holes. What do they mean for the overall statement being made? What do they mean for the overall narrative or the overall picture being painted here? You know what I'm saying?
I mean, because we've even seen our own people purposely put out negative messages, put out negative statistics, put out negative information about Black people just to get clicks, just to get attention from the others. So that going back to reiterating what you're saying, study everything, research everything, like assume everybody's lying.
Absolutely.
That way that will spark more critical thinking on your part. And but that will keep you from having your heart broke all the time about the things that's really going on. But that will also keep you out of the dark and looking at your people in a negative light, because you believe the narratives rather than the actual information that's there present, showing you that what the masses are saying is a damn lie. Fuck that lying shit.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, it's up to us to grab control of our community, man. Right now, everything is in our hands. We are third class citizens in America. The Hispanics have passed us in population size. So the Hispanics are about to start getting more attention than us. So we're now third class citizens in America. So we're going to get treated as third class citizens. We're going to get third class citizen looks. But the question is, forget how others are relating to us. How are we relating to ourselves? What are we going to do for ourselves to make sure we straight, to make sure we have what we need for ourselves? Are we going to continue to just sit back and expect other people to do right by us? Or are we going to do right by our damn selves?
Mm-hmm.
Y'all got, we, it's up to us to make the choice. If not, 2053 is on the way. You better have your goddamn plan together. You better have your 2053 plan together. We're going to keep talking about 2053. Have your plan together. So.
Absolutely.
And that's all I got to say about that.
You heard him?
Hey, man. Freedom Train podcast series, Chicken Wings. Chicken Wang, Chicken Wang, Chicken Wang, Chicken Wang, Chicken Wang, Chicken Wang. Hey, man, we'll see y'all next week. We tired of shit. It's been a long day. Forget all that fancy outro shit. Dead boogers and digging ass. Wash your hands. If you don't, jump off a bridge. Freedom Train Podcast. Joe Pat, he got hair. I don't. Fuck all that shit. Bye.